Welcome to the Tour Life Podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a tour photographer and podcaster who also provides tour security services through Silver Spear Security. He is the co-host of the Making Waves podcast and the Scatterbrain podcast. He is also a contributor to the radio industry magazine Max Alt Rock. In this episode, we discuss why following up is so important, how he got his first taste of the security world with In This Moment, the role podcasting played for out-of-work touring folk in 2020, how he stays connected to the ship-rocked community of fans, and why physical fitness is incredibly important for the touring community. You can find him on Instagram at justinpress_photo. Here is my conversation with Justin Press. Hi, Justin. Thank you so much for joining me on the Tour Life.
Yeah, no, listen, thank you. This is a real pleasure and honor. Like I said, we were speaking before we went on. I obviously had good friends that had been on this. And then I looked at the long list of people you've had on. I was like, yeah, I totally want to speak with her and get on and explain my story. And hopefully it connects with some of your listeners and they can go, you know, when you listen to a podcast, sometimes you're going, yeah, you're just shaking your head. Yep. I get it. I know this story.
You know, one of the things that I noticed about what you do is that you play a lot of roles in different spaces, and within this moment in particular, how you were a photographer and then you also were head of security and things. I would love to hear about how you started in the industry. Was it something that you knew you always wanted to do, or did you have a bunch of interests that somehow aligned with the music industry?
I knew I wanted to do it. Or had an interest in it, but I didn't know it. I was 9 years old. It was the first time I went to a concert. It was to see Kiss, and it was 1976. So I went to the show, and I was like, this is the most amazing thing ever. I was like, obviously grew up in the 70s, kind of the era of rock. So you were early on, you learned about music. My first album, I bought it. I was 5 years old as Alice Cooper. I mean, what 5 year old listens to Alice Cooper? I did. And, I went through everything and I went to school at the University of Texas and I worked at a record store there. And I always went to concerts in high school and stuff like that. But we need a career. What do you mean a career? You just thought about the artist at the time. You weren't thinking about the show, like how the show happened. And when I went to school, I graduated. I worked in Austin with thriving music business, but I never thought about anything outside the record store. I wasn't thinking like that the magazines I bought never talked about the backstage life. They talked about what's going on with the band, the artists, their albums or whatever. And then after school, kind of messed around doing a few different careers. I taught school and things like that for a while, paid off my college. And then how I got started in this business, I worked in the record business for a hot minute. I worked actually in the record industry. And then in 2002, there was a new venue that opened up in Grand Prairie right outside Dallas. It's called Next Stage. And it was a city-run building, and they had Styx and REO Speedwagon. Girlfriend at the time and I, we both grew up in there. I was like, let's go see this show. Let's go see this new venue. So we go to the venue, and it's like this. It was the beginning of the new kind of like very comfortable venues, like the super venues, like at cup holders and the seats recline. Everything's like super plush and nice. The staff is like really well-mannered. They're dressed up. And the show was great. It sounded amazing. So believe it or not, the next day I wrote a letter to the venue. I said, this is an incredible experience. I look forward to more shows there. About a week later, I got a call from this girl because I'm so-and-so. I do the HR at this building and we just got a letter from you. I said, yeah, that was a great show. She's like, do you want to come in for an interview? I'm like, okay, to do what? She's like, to be a production runner. I'm like, what's that? And again, I'd been working in music business. I never I cared about production, but I you know, you go backstage to meet the artist and do your thing. You never go like, what is that person doing? And I had no clue what a production run was. And I went in and I interviewed it and they said, this is what you're going to do. And I'm like, absolutely, I'm doing it. And I started like a week later and my first act I worked for solely was David Crosby. And it was a tough one. And it's one of those things like, did I get myself in a bad position? But you know what? I gutted through it. I did production for like 7 months, just production runner. And then I started getting like more roles as a production assistant production manager. Like one night, my first job as production manager, I had Motley Crue. They just got back together. And then like the following night was Duran Duran, who just got back together. I was just like, I mean, it was a 72 to not 84 hour stretch. I mean, 24 hours a day. I slept up there. I really put them all in because I was like, I fell in love with the business so quickly and that end of things. And it was great. And then the guy who was like the GM came through the doors. We call them the doors between production and admin, you know, where the marketing and sales, like all the, you know, the professionals, right? And the guy came and goes, hey, does anyone back here know how to do Excel? I'm like, yeah, I know how to do Excel. He's like, you're hired. You're my assistant now. So I became the assistant to the GM. So I went to the other side of doors, left production. I still did it from time to time if I was asked about it. But then I kind of got into the world of just like venue operations. So I started working a lot more with the tours as they were coming through and started really learning roles, learning people, networking, making contacts. So that's how I began. And I did that for 7 years. Oh, and that was with AEG Live. So, you know, you got them and they were AEG Live at the time was not like Live Nation. They were AEG Live was trying to get more into a lot of the venue stuff. They were still doing big tours and things like that. And we were doing some really great tours and routing. And we were having 150 to maybe 200 shows sometimes coming through a year. Amazing. Amazing.
Wow. So, you know, something that really stands out for me is that you sent a letter and they were like, okay. And this is pre LinkedIn where like they could search for you. And, right. Mm-hmm. So how exactly did that happen? Like what was in that letter that was so special besides just giving them some props?
I maybe just the way I just wrote it. I suppose, I have a pretty decent vernacular. So I just kind of wrote this letter and it hit the right person. And the girl was very open to whatever it was. And maybe they never saw me. It's not like I introduced myself to the show. So she saw it sight unseen. She goes, and I never asked this girl, Laura. I never asked her why, what made you, I mean, cause A, she doesn't get letters like that. No one sends letters like that. Even back then they would write to the band. They wouldn't write to the venue. But again, that comes from my mentality about the mechanisms of the business. And not at the time I didn't have it, but I just wrote it. I just felt something. And I went in there and I was dressed up. I almost came in I didn't come in a suit, but I was pretty darn close. And I think they were impressed the fact that I was treating this in a professional manner. And I didn't come in there jeans and like a Steve Miller t-shirt or something, you know. I came in there ready to like talk to them. And I had a really good interview. And the fact that I actually worked in the record business, so I'm very inept at the lingo and the music business itself and very mature about it. I think that made it easy for them. And they were basically looking for people because they were really a new building. And I think they were still staffing at that time. And some of the other people they had, really good workers, but not the most reliable people. It's just it's kind of a gypsy wayward lifestyle for some. And I treated it more like this is a stepping stone for me. This is going to be my profession going out.
Yeah. So it seems like they knew you were in the industry and they're like, we just need to tap his talent because we see something basically.
They took a leap of faith and having me come in. Basically they could have just gone. And I, again, first time ever to the building, I didn't know a soul in the building. I didn't know anyone in that business at the time. So I just did it to do it.
I love it. I love it. And those are those sorts of like serendipitous like situations that happen where like you put in some effort, you know, genuine effort to, mm-hmm. You're just genuine. Like you show some sort of authenticity and then it leads you where you need to go. So that's really cool.
Yeah. Cause it's funny. Cause I still run into people who go, man, how do you get started in this business? I'm like, do you want how I started or how what's, I think the best way going forward? I mean, obviously it's such a different world now, like you just said, just be authentic. Go ask. Go. I mean, I wrote a letter just to a random stranger, which is one in a million shot. I said, nowadays, I'd be like, go to your local hall, see if they need help, push around. You know, never work for free because they'll take advantage of you. And that, you know, and there's all kinds of laws now and things like that. But I'm just go say, hey, give them 10 hours a week and then keep building upon that. Be reliable, show up on time, have a good attitude, don't complain, and stay out of people's ways.
I love that. I love that you said never work for free, because, you know, in today's world, there's, you know, the whole unpaid internship thing is just the standard now. And, you know, everyone's basically just trying to, they want 5 years of experience for like a starting salary and things like that. And I think it is important to understand that there is a trade-off. You know, like, you obviously can't come in hot and be like, okay, well, you know, pay me this and give me all these hours, because then you just won't get the job. But there is something to say about having that expectation of, you know, if I show up for you, I expect, you know, some respect in return.
Mm-hmm. I think what a lot of people is like, especially in this business, I mean, my thing with this, it's a privilege to work in this business. It really is. And that's, and it's, some people will hem and haw at this, but that's half of your pay, the ability to travel, to work, to be involved in the entertainment business, to do this for a living, to just create these amazing stories. There's a trade off though. Yeah. Sometimes you get paid, like, you know, maybe not what you think you're worth. You'll get paid whatever the budget allows. And you have to take that in consideration. And at some point you just get over that, get over your ego about it. If you really want to do this, prepared to work hard and scrape a life together. And then eventually someone will see your talent that says, you know what, I'm going to pay you what you're worth.
Well, and it's important to understand, like you said, that part of the pay really is the experience. And it's not the same, like the experience would be, you know, just in I don't know, an office job, right? Like if you're being, you know, if they take you on tour and you're able to experience the whole being on the road part, like that is some invaluable firsthand knowledge that you're getting. And I don't think it compares really to a lot of things. So I do think I can appreciate that.
Well, I mean, listen, you mentioned office jobs. Office jobs, they don't pay you as much because they fatten up your benefits, medical, dental, vision, which is obviously very expensive, but they realize that very rarely you're going to use those items. You go see the dentist twice a year to get your teeth cleaned. It's much more advantageous for them cost-wise to just give you a better benefit package and not so much worry about paying you as much, because a lot of people's minds, that's the trade-off. I think with the tour business, you are in a position to now network in a way you never could before. You have a chance to show your abilities to maybe other tours that you're part of. So maybe somewhere down the road, that tour manager will go, remember that guy we saw in Peoria? He was great. And yeah, that's just, you'll get out and do that in that way. Plus, you know, there's always a thing like you get paid, you know, obviously you make your pay, whatever your salary is, you get per diem. You're not spending money for food, you know, most of the time on a tour that's at that level. I mean, obviously when you're hitting the van, yeah, you're living at 7-Eleven. But that's a whole other type of thing we talk about. At that point, that's strictly for the love of it. Hopping in a van with you and your buddies, I mean, you everyone has to pay their dues, and that's paying in full for sure.
Yeah, you're like the tour manager and the front house engineer, the runner. You're everybody. So yeah, that's super cool. So tell me about when you got into photography. Was that something that you always did, or is it something that you developed throughout your career?
Well, I was a photographer in college. I used to shoot for the college paper. It was all film, obviously film days back then, so we weren't really in the digital era. But so what happened, I just never really, I shot here and there, but I never shot shows. And the funny thing is, when I worked for AEG and I had access to everything, but you know what, I just talked to someone the other day about this. I never shot pictures because I didn't want to be seen as some the venue guy who's kind of a fanboy taking photos. You know, you got to be professional and you got to remain invisible backstage. You be stealth. Don't let them know you're there, kind of thing. That's the best way to work. Because at the end, you know, that's what they'll remember, is like the people that the venues who did what they needed and weren't in the way. And me walking around with a camera would feel like I'm in the way. Even though I could have gotten some of the choicest shots I could have ever dreamed of, you know, but I just live off the memories of that. So when I got done with that and started doing, I worked with partnering with a PR firm, and we started working in the music area of things for brands. Then I started shooting. So I bought a camera, kind of learned the digital way now, and then was off and running. And I just always had kind of a, I'm not a technical guy. Like I can't nail precise shots, but people always say that, you know, I just have, I have a very good eye for things. And I just look at things in a different perspective. So when I do like band shots, or I'll do live shots, or even the tour photography, it's you're getting a different perspective for me than you probably would from a lot of other people. And I really do focus on more of life on the road shots. There's a million stage shots. And I get the shots you need for your live presentation to wherever you want to put it on your social medias. But I, for the band, for the crew, for myself and for fans, I think it's so interesting to see what happens putting the show together. Life on the road, those kind of things are the shots that really mean a lot to me.
Have you had any conversations with people who saw your photography of the more hidden sides of a tour? And like, what did they think?
They love it. Because I know boundaries. I would never put anyone in a compromising position. And I capture the moments where you can see there are certain moments backstage where you can see joy or happiness from a performer's perspective, or just the amount of work the crew's putting in. So that's the thing. Well, I do a lot of crew shots too, because the crew's never, they always feel like they're like, we're not being highlighted. No one's paying attention to us, but I do. And I'll send everyone a crew like, hey, I took the shot when you're doing this. And they just love the photo. They love the fact that like, wow, this is what I do for a living. It really helps them and inspires them. You know, it makes them feel good about what they do. To see that someone's paying attention to them. And the shots are super interesting. And I get more reactions from people when I put it out into onto the web or something like that. And people are like, man, these are so interesting. It's so an interesting shot. And I would never compromise, even the artists, I never compromise who they are. I know their privacy. And so I just get them when the shots are proper, whether it's walking down the hall, getting ready to go on stage, you know, maybe a little prayer before the show starts. Those kind of moments. I just try to capture moments. I don't ever want to capture anyone. And I will never, ever. And if I happen to capture someone in an embarrassing moment, that gets deleted. I don't want it. And they certainly don't want it.
Yeah. That's a lot of responsibility to own it.
Cause you're helping brand them. You know, they're branding themselves, but you as a photographer, especially a tour photographer who's hired by them, part of your job is to brand them in the best light you can, you know? And I always make sure with Maria in this moment, here are the shots. Take a look at them. But once the tour is over, I'll take stuff that had nothing to do with the show, nothing that had to do with what she had to put in. And like the band, like just the guys backstage, like tuning up the band guys, you know, just really cool, just like fun shots. And I'll give that to them after the tour is over and things like that, because the tour's played off and they'll move on to the next tour. And that won't involve these photos.
That's super fun. I really love that. I do. And so tell me a little bit about what other things you do when you're on the road. It seems like you wear a couple of different hats. And yeah. Is there anything that you do kind of to take your mind off when you do have a minute?
You know, it's going to sound so funny. Yeah, I love wandering venues. I love venues. I love buildings. I love architecture. I love those things in the building. I loved when we were on the road with Disturbed, we went from doing theater shows to doing arenas as their main opener. And I just love to wander the venue. If I have like an hour to kill, I'll just wander around. I like looking at seat placements. I love looking at the stage being built. I love the quiet of all that. I love the solace. If we have a day off, I'll go check out like whatever town we're in or stuff like that. But a lot of times it's just when we have time off during the show day, that's what I'm doing. I'm just wandering around the venue, or I'm in the editing bay doing photos or videos, doing that stuff. As far as that, but when I took over and started doing security things, that's a whole different ballgame.
So tell me about that.
Well, what happened with the whole thing within this moment is their main photographer was going off on, he was going, he has some other tours he was responsible for as well. So they had to fill this void quickly. And I've been shooting them because I've been friends with the band for like 10 years. I've been shooting them forever. And I'd always give them my photos. So like, just fun. Have some fun with these photos. And they liked it. Maria liked what I was doing. Funny story. I can tell it. So they, one of the components they want is they want video as well with the photos. I'm not a video guy. I can shoot like an iPhone video, but then, so I had a buddy of mine living in Dallas who shoots for Nat Geo and Nike. So he gave me like a weekend crash course and how to video and basically edit.
Thank God for Nikon introducing video into DSLR, right?
Actually, he made me switch over to, I was shooting Canon and he goes, you got to go get the Sonys. This is the best
way. Oh, you're on Sony?
Yeah. Well, I'm not anymore, but I was for that tour because it was just easier to learn. And since he was teaching me that, I had got the exact same camera he taught me on. And I could switch over to stills and shoot stills on it. But yeah. So he gave me a crash course and I was able to kind of gut through it. And learning to use a gimbal is a whole other nightmare.
That's the little contraption that like keeps it.
Balances it. It makes it float, keeps it from floating. So I used to do handheld and, you know, it's one of those things, again, I would just, okay, it's going to be maybe just a little shaky, but that's just my style. And at some point you go say, this is my style. This is how I shoot. But I was able to get some stuff that they needed, but we focused more on the stills. So what the security thing happened is they did want to focus more on video, and God bless them. So they went and got someone who's a little bit more video centric. Amazing kid. Amazing. I was just like, I would have made that move too, because what you're looking for, he can deliver in spades. So that was good. But they're also their security guy was leaving because he was going to go focus on his artist. He's going to go focus on doing some murals. And they were looking at us and they were like, can you do this? I'm like, absolutely. Because I've done venue operations for so long. And part of that job is dealing with security, dealing with local PD, dealing with fire departments, dealing with EMT. So I was so familiar with all that. And I'm a sizable person. I can present a presence there. And again, I had the trust of the band. And, you know, it's just like, they're my close friends. So I'm like, not only are you a client, you know, quote unquote, but you're also good friends of mine. I would never let anything happen to you. And it was really a good learning experience. And I had a lot of fun with it. And I thought I did a really good job for someone going into that position, because you watch when you're on tour too, you also watch the usual security people, how they operate, and you go over things, you do a little training on the road. So when that person leaves, it's pretty seamless. And that's what it was like. So I had a great time doing it. And it's definitely something that I've gotten more involved in as far as like working with the guys, John from Silver Spear, who you had on. John's now one of my mentors in security things. So I'm working with them on things and getting some additional training. And we're really working now on all our COVID compliance things and things like that. So it's I look forward to more of a life probably geared towards the security thing.
That's really cool. Yeah. And it's fun to see that, like, you know, you guys have a really cool social media presence, and then you also have podcasts that you're involved with.
The one I do with John is called Scatterbrain. And John and I were both looking for a personal outlet. We weren't doing anything. We weren't trying to brand anything. We weren't trying to sell anything. We're just a free form thing. So, you know, we'll talk about music. We'll talk about touring. We'll talk this and that. Well, we both love pop culture. I'm sorry. And so we'll sit there and like spend half an episode reconstructing if they were going to remake Jaws, who would star and what role. Just like, it's just two idiots. It sounds like just you, if you were to sit next to two guys on a bar stool and just listen to their conversation, that's what that is. It's just, it doesn't do anything as far as like we're not trying to move the needle on anything. We're just two guys expressing ourselves, and maybe a few people will turn into it and go, they're talking about recasting Jaws in this podcast. I've got to listen to this, you know?
Well, Scatterbrain makes sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's Scatterbrain. Was it what we call Scatterbrain. Anyway, so it's Meditations for the Caffeinated Mind. That's what it is. So we're both big coffee drinkers and things like that. So we just kind of went from that. But again, it's just a time. It's a chance for us to cut loose, like, you know, once a week or so. We just do that. And then John obviously has Spear Talk, which he has just been rolling left and right. And a lot of these things, and even Making Waves, came from basically when COVID hit, our business shut down. Our events shut down. No one was going on the road. No one was doing anything. So we're like, well, we got to come up with ideas. So actually, it really started with Silver Spear. John is really great at networking with a lot of these really obscure stars, movie stars or anything, because he's got like this incredible mind for like movies and music and things like that. So he goes, he started hosting, like he started getting in touch with all these guys who are like icons and like martial arts and like MMA and old actors and things like that. People who are like stunt people in movies. And we just started doing Netflix watching parties. Right. And all these, like the stars from those, whatever movie would come on. Like we did, like when BBC put out Dracula last year, they put out their new version of Dracula. And we brought on Dakar Stoker, who is Bram Stoker's great nephew. And he was like the guest, like moderator on our Netflix watching party.
So is John really amazing at like finding the connection and like, like digging?
Yes. John would make a great, John is the kind of guy, he's a connector, right? He will go out and search these people out and bring them into the fold. And then they become part of everything. Like, because he's fearless. You know, some people are nervous to talk with people. Not John. He jumps right in. He'll bring on like, because I'll sit there and update our guest list. And he goes, oh, this number, episode 40 is going to have this person. I'm going, where the hell did he find that person? I mean, like, just, it's amazing. Every week he just surprises me so much. So, yeah. So, John started with Spear Talk, was kind of came from the Netflix thing. He's like, no, I'm going to do a podcast. And it's going to, initially it started out with security. And it still does highly involve security. But, you know, so the martial arts stuff came in there. And then like the movie people who are like action stars back in the 70s and the 80s came in. And then he does a lot of stuff with his clients, the guys in Shinedown. So he has a podcast now with Zach, the guitarist, called, Seemingly Unknown Podcast. So everything just kind of filters and branches off with John on that stuff. But yeah, so that's why Spear Talk started, is because we need to create engagement with our audience. And Making Waves, Shiprocked, we did that because we finished up our sailing in 2020. And then we planned to go out in 2021, January 2021. We're ready to go for our next thing. Well, then COVID hit and we're like, oh God, what's going to happen? So we don't know where we had to cancel 2021. We moved it to May and now we've moved it to January 2022. So the decision was made early last summer. Let's create a podcast. It started off as a live stream. Every week, let's live stream an artist. We'll do interviews. We'll go on our Facebook page. We have like 75,000 people there. Let's just start engaging. And we bring the person on, we interview them and we get questions. And then we said, well, why don't we turn this into a podcast? And that way we can start bringing partners in and things like that. So that began because we just needed another form of engagement with our community, which is already really vast. But we just said, let's up the ante. Let's keep creating these things that keeps people engaged. We didn't want to be one of those festivals that takes your money and then you wait a year and then you see us again. We want to make sure that we're in your lives daily. So I co-hosted that with Chad Nicefield. Chad used to be the singer for the band Wilson. And now Chad's heavily involved in booking rooms and promoting and all kinds of other stuff, musical endeavors. He works with artists doing kind of like, you know, working on like basically breaking down song smithing and everything like that. So, yeah, it's so great to get involved with this new paradigm like podcasting. But you're doing it with people who have so much energy and stuff going on that, by osmosis, it comes onto you and you're like, I got to keep hustling here. I'm going to keep doing things and branching out. So a lot of this, it went from something to keep the boredom away to something now we've all become very passionate about.
Do you think it's been helping your mental state?
You know what? It's been helping the mental state of people that are our listeners, at least with Making Waves, because again, they're a very committed community. I've been doing that for 12 years and we work on that every day, all year. And that means just setting up the cruise, getting in the charter going, getting the tickets on sale, communicating with our guests, then having the bill, building the bill, putting the lineup out, and then working on the parties and theme nights, everything. It's very hands-on with our staff. So to do the podcast, it because sometimes, especially during COVID, things are starting to open up a little bit more. But during COVID, initially when everyone was locked in, they really needed, I could sense that they needed outreach because they come on the cruise now, not so much for the bands. They come for the community they've all built. They've all become very good friends. They have lives together away from the cruise. That is amazing. They're like, we have this thing called Ship Rocker events now, where like a bunch of them in a certain area will get together for the weekend and go camping, or they'll go skiing, or they'll go to Daytona. Like this week is like Daytona Bike Week. Like 150 of them are going to it. I'm going, I can't get two people to go get coffee with me. How the hell do you people draw people in from across the country to get together? It's the most amazing thing. And yeah, so I think it's been good for their mental state. For me, yes, it's been good to just feel I'm reaching out, you know, just for my own sake. I mean, I'm a quiet guy. I don't really have too many friends in the city I live in, and it's my outreach. It gives me a forum. So yeah, it does help. And it gives me, especially the thing with John, it's just a ton of I know for that hour, I'm going to laugh my ass off, and it's going to be the, like the best, heartiest, you know, just like stomach hurting laughs. And I need that, you know, pressure valve. Yeah. So yeah, it's been really good there. But let me tell you why 2019 was so important to me. 2019 started, I started doing, working for a promoter in Texas. And we're doing shows, we're booking all the shows across Texas and doing the marketing and going shows and settling shows and dealing with the artists and dealing with staffing and everything like that. So it's really good. But the year prior to that, my mom had passed away. I was in the midst of a divorce. My dogs had died, sold the house. I was just like living in basically living out of a friend's bedroom. And then the offer came to go on the road. I was like, yeah, I got to escape. I got to go do these things to my, talk about a mental wellness break. Some people go on the road because, you know, for all kinds of different reasons. I needed it to escape and just forget about things for a while, let them play out, and be distracted. And the best way I could think to do that was be around friends, traveling on a bus around the country. So yeah, it was good. It came at the right, it was all about timing for sure. But yeah, so that was if touring, if anything has ever done for me, it's given me that. It's given me that escape from whatever. And I'm not someone who runs away from things, but I really needed it at that point in my life.
You're giving me the sense that the escape that you got, like you said, wasn't like you were running away or hiding from anything. It was just a way for you to deal with your feelings. Is that sort of it? Or were you avoiding them?
No, I wasn't running away from anyone, any person, any entity. I was running away from myself in the sense that I was trying to leave. If I would have stayed in the situation I was in, I could have just kept going to shows. I was so busy with promoting shows that I really didn't have time to think. But I also was like, I got to get out of the city. I've got to escape whatever it is. I've got to minimalize my life, get it down to a suitcase and go. And it was nothing more than helping me rechannel and get the energy back in my life, because I felt very drained at the time. And I'm a very vibrant person, real super positive about things as best I can. And I was like, I've got to go do this so I can find me again. I've got to go find that person that I really like. And being on the road was going to do it, because it was going to get me involved in things I love. Tours, I love music, I love live music, I love the mechanics of production, I love all of those things. I love the idea of having a beer after at 2 o'clock in the morning, after everything's packed up and we're just waiting for the bus to take off. I love all of those things. I love the camaraderie, and I needed all of that. Cause I was kind of working as an island unto myself for a long time doing the promoting thing. Everyone's working remotely out of their homes or whatever. We have a small office. It's like, man, I need to go. I'm one of those weird guys. People like to leave the circus. I wanted to go join it. I needed to be really invested in something for a while that was going to be all of me 24/7.
Yeah. You needed that community, right?
1000%, because they're good people. And I understood why they do what they do. I love the creative process. I love being around creative people, and I love being around hardworking people. So I had the best of both worlds.
Yeah, one of the things that I definitely believe helps us when we're going through a really hard time, especially when we experience loss, is to make a move, because a lot of times it makes you feel out of control. And if you can find a way to set your life in motion in one way or another, it can actually help kind of shake you out of that trance that you get in when you're feeling really down.
Yeah. And, you know, it opened up also the creative aspect, my creative side. Everything was kind of like, I wasn't shooting, I wasn't writing, I wasn't doing the things that helped me. And so to get back out and be like, hey, I'm going to be able to do this. And wow, it's also going to, well, it's going to have a paycheck attached to it. That's really cool. And there's times you're like, man, I, not that I would do it for anything less than what I was working, but I was like, man, this is that being able to be out and be creative again. That's part of the whole pay in itself type of thing. You know, pay me what you're going to pay me. I'm not going to squabble over that. I'm just stoked and blessed and privileged to be out here with you folks. This is amazing. And so, yeah, so it like you said, it just kind of helped me. It helped me kind of refine myself and make me happy again. And in the turn, when I'm happy, I have the ability to make other people around me happy, feel confident, feel good about what they're doing. But don't get me wrong. There were times in a row when I was just like, oh boy, you know, you're dealing with egos. Obviously you just, it's funny because I was still, for everything I was going through before, I was still a little bit fragile. So when you start and you're like, and you're still fragile, you still try to be strong and present yourself in a way, but inside you're fragile and vulnerable. And then you're dealing, you beat head on with some egos and you're just like, oh boy, you know, you got to maintain, man, be mature. You're the older one here, be mature. So yeah, it was good, but I understand why after a while you understand why people, if the ego is to protect themselves, it's to build their own little wall and shields because they don't want to get hurt. They don't want to, they're, you know, for, it's so funny. It's like the insecurities they might have come out, and that's just a way to kind of, that's insecurity talking a lot of times when the ego comes out, you know?
And I think a lot of us know that on the superficial level, but it doesn't mm-hmm. really quite click until you go through a situation or various situations that kind of pile up on you that force you to look back at your life and look back at who you are and really look inward to figure out what's going on with you and what you need and who you are. Is that something that you went through?
Yeah. You know what it taught me? All of that taught me empathy. And if I'm hiring for a tour, that's one of the questions I'd ask a prospective work or someone. Are you empathetic? Do you understand what other people are going to be going through? And it might somehow wind up on your lap for 5 minutes. Can you deal with that? Do you understand why they're doing it? So that's one thing. Yeah, I think it made me really empathetic. It also built up my patience, which at times was wavering because, again, I was so afraid. I just, you know, taking care of someone for 2 years and they pass away, then getting divorced and your loving dogs are passing away. You're like, what? I mean, you never get more, obviously, than you can shoulder, but sometimes it feels like a hell of a weight. And so, yeah, it taught me the two most important things was patience and empathy. So again, I, if any crew people out there, when you're doing your hiring, ask those questions that we sometimes forget even asking. Going back to the office job, we know people talk about like, what's your resume say? Okay, that's great. How are you half the time when you work with people, I was like, how are they as people? Are they do they treat their workspace like their house? Do they leave the office kitchen dirty? I mean, who are these people? You know, you wonder about those, it's the periphery things, the little tangible items that make people who they are as a worker and as a person. So again, what happens too is like, you know, when you go on the road, you're dealing with people, you don't live with them. You don't really, you know them, but you don't live in their world. So when you start getting people on a bus for the first week, and then you start realizing how are they going to live on the bus? What are their habits? Is everyone going to be able to kind of come to an agreement and say, this is how we're going to treat the bus. This is how we're going to live on the bus together. This is how we're going to keep it, you know, clean and clutter free and all this other stuff. So yeah, there's a lot. I learned a lot, and it was some of the best experiences dealing with people in a group situation, also one-on-one.
Yeah, I mean, when you're on the road, I mean, you're hiring somebody to be on there. It's like you're interviewing either a partner or a roommate, you know? So it's like, that's what it seems like. And the person and who that person is really does matter.
Yeah. Oh, that's the thing. It's like, you can find a lot of people who can do the job you're looking for probably very well, as far as from a technical standpoint, but you start dealing with all those other things. What are they like as a person? And that's a lot of it comes down to is, like you said, like you got to talk to them like you're getting a roommate, because for the next 4 to 6 months, they're your roommate. You know, you're the landlord. And so, yeah, there's that. But it's also a funny thing, too, is like being on the road, doing the security aspect of things for Maria. We'd have a post-show meet and greets, and we build up like a little structure, a little tent, like kind of like ambiance vibe tent for her, for the people who would come and do the meet and greets. And it's such a unique experience to be backstage and dealing with everything you do. And you sometimes reminded what it's like to be a fan when they're all waiting in line, you're talking to them, kind of giving them a lowdown, like, hey, this is how we're going to run this. And just the excitement was always so intoxicating, the excitement in their eyes. They've been through a 3-hour show and they're still out here at, you know, 11:30 at night, ready to meet, you know, someone they really care about. And they're just, I always love that part of the road too, was the excitement of fans in those situations, not the big crowds. The crowds thing's one thing. They're all excited because it's a tribal thing, but when they're one-on-one, they're getting ready to meet. And just like some of them will be shaking, like getting ready to meet her, like scared. I'm like, relax. It's going to be the best experience you're going to ever have. It's going to be fine. Relax. I love that aspect of being somewhat of a soother for their nerves, or trying to control them down, bring your level down a little bit. You know, let's make this a fun, calm experience for everyone. So that was always a lot of fun too. I really enjoyed, as hard as it was to get it done, because you're already been working all day, and then to do something at like 11:30 or midnight, and you're still in, you know, you still have your game face on. It can be a little taxing, but I really did enjoy those things.
That's something that I've heard from various people about, you know, what they really miss about pre-pandemic life on the road. And a lot of it does come back to that feeling that you give the fans. I mean, and it sounds, you know, cliche to say, but it really is. I mean, and if you think about any fulfillment that we get from any type of career, I think the fulfillment really does come from what you do for others, what good feelings you bring up in others. And that's what can keep you going.
Yeah. In life, that's my thing. It's like, we always, I mean, away from music, I mean, I think a lot of people in life, I'll spend my last dime to help someone else out. You know, I enjoy that gift of giving. And I, like you said, it sounds so cliche, because we all want things. Me, I just want a peace of mind. And I think helping others is definitely a peace of mind. And I think there's a peace of mind in the music aspect of like giving fans a great way to unwind on an evening. You know, everyone's like, well, you work all day for an hour of the show, but you don't understand what that hour means to everyone. You don't understand what it obviously means to the band, but what it means to the audience. Like, man, they needed this. They've been looking forward to it forever, and they're there, they're having the best time, and then they can't wait till for it to happen again. So yeah, it means a lot. And listen, I'm no different. I mean, before I went on tour, I went out and met up with a bunch of buddies in Nashville, and we all went to see Iron Maiden, because we all love Iron Maiden. And we're in the balcony like everyone else, just screaming and just drinking and having the best time ever. I'm going, never forget what it's like to be a fan. Never forget. And if you do that, you'll always really look at your job in a much different manner. Because people do get burned out. They get beat up. They get broken down, frayed. They miss their family. They miss home. They miss their bed. But I think sometimes when you need that extra push, I think if you think about being a fan again, I think it helps you get over that hump.
Yeah, it's easy to get jaded, I think, in any, just in life. Sometimes you have to kind of stop and like take inventory of where you are and where you've been and all of the good things that have happened along the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny you mention that, because it's sitting there. I wasn't on tour with them at the time, but in this moment, just finished up. They were in Amsterdam doing like the end of 2019. And they just, you know, you have to stream down when you go overseas. And so, but I met up with them in Amsterdam, and I was taking some shots with them. And I'm like, there's like a full 5,000-6,000 people, full arena. And I get behind the stage and come out from behind Maria's tent. And just, there's like Maria and Aaron and then Nikki, who is the other performer. And I take the shot and I look at it for a second. I'm going, I can't believe I'm in Amsterdam. This place, taking this incredible shot with my friends. This is fucking amazing. This is what an amazing place to be. Or like, you know, just like one, when we would be on the road with Disturbed, I'd be like at the top of the arena looking down, and everything's built and it's quiet, and you can hear a pin drop because people are at dinner or whatever, the doors aren't open. And going, you just soak it all in. You go, I can't believe I do this for a living. This is amazing. This is amazing. And this is me being a kid opening up the Kiss album going, oh my God, that's so cool. And then shit, 45 years later, I'm going, I can't believe I'm here. My parents would be so stoked. So yeah, it's an incredible experience. I mean, again, that's the give and take, you know. And the thing is, like, my friends, like, it's great to give them stories. Tell us what happened. Tell us about the road. And I'll tell them. And it's always good to have the stories too. Cause you know, again, it's the trade off is you're going to see and be involved in things they'll never, ever be a part of. Most people won't be. So yeah. So it's great. But I can see also too, how if you're on long enough and the tour is hard enough, how it can really beat people up. And it takes a special kind of person to deal with it.
Yeah. Have you experienced or helped people through or seen people experience moments where it just wasn't right? And what would you say to someone who, you know, comes, maybe they have taken inventory and they've decided, you know, maybe this isn't for me anymore. What do you think about that?
Well, I've had plenty of friends who, when COVID hit, they didn't know what they were going to do and they pivoted. They went to other jobs in different, completely different industries, and they're not coming back. It's not for any reason, but the fact that most of them is because they have a family. They want some stability. They've done the road. Hey, I've been out. It was great. I'm ready to move on to this other phase of my life. They don't want to move about like that anymore. Other priorities, children, everything's come into play. So those people, I think the decision was somewhat easy. It was almost kind of forced upon them. And they just had to make a decision to do it. Because a lot of them are very highly skilled people, and they're not going about to get into a really good job and just go, well, I'll just do this for 18 months and then go back on the road. No, I think it's something they want to kind of create something for themselves, some stability. Other people, I think they love the business, and maybe the few people I had talked to who would talk about like road burnout, they would just go and probably just go home and work static, go work at a venue that's local to where they are at, or go work in something where they basically they could go home every day, but never really leave the business, but leave the touring business themselves. I never really ran into anyone who got broken down by it. There were a few people who needed to leave because they were getting either, it was kind of getting away from them. You know, they were like indulging or whatever else, or it was just too much for them. But I never really ran into too many serious people. Most of the people I ran into were pretty committed to it. You know, they were, as soon as this tour was done, they were going on another one. They were out there. They're rock and roll gypsies. They're going for it. And I applaud them. That's great. But, you know, there's people like you see that are like, a lot of people at the point where they're more than happy to leave the road because they just want to transition in the business. Maybe they go work for Live Nation or someone. Maybe they got that offer. And, you know, people want to, they don't have a problem. They're still staying in the business. But you know what? It's that pressure, that daily pressure of putting on a show is not there anymore. But they're still part of the system.
Yeah. Do you feel that the community, like the touring community, is pretty open about like having those sorts of conversations and being supportive with each other? Do you think that just that conversation is pretty free flowing right now?
Yes. I remember early on, and I still see it, like people like even on Facebook, hey man, just reaching out, everyone give me a thumbs up, you know, kind of thing, just doing a health check, you know, and people, hey, doing good. A lot of it's like, I wish it was coming back. And John and I used to have this discussion like the first few months. And we're like, look, understand this is going to be a while. You lick your wounds. You could be sad for a while, but at some point you got to do something. And we were always about trying to tell people we knew or just putting it out there into the world and see if anyone grabbed it. Build up your skill sets. Just keep building your skill set. So you become, because guess what? When we go back to the road, you can no longer just be the guitar tech. You better be the drum tech. You better learn two or three different skills because things are going to slim down a little bit to begin with. Some artists won't miss a beat. They'll go out with the same show. Some are going to have to trim down their crew a little bit. So if you know enough things adequately, then you'll be more apt to be hired because you're going to basically cover a space and open up some bunk room. So yes, I think the community overall has been very good. At times, look, we all know when everything was going good, it gets a little cutthroat, you know, it's like anyone, egos kick in and, well, why didn't they pick me to go out, or why they had that person no good. You just, you know, typical cattiness. And I'm like, you got to be above, you got to rise yourself above that. You don't want to get stuck into that bunch, because no one ever wants to be seen doing that. But I think now, right now, when the rubber hits the road, everyone's very supportive of one another. And it's like, if anything, even it's just like, I can't wait to get back on the road. And a lot of people just type in, well, me as well, me too, like that. So like, people are paying attention to it. And I think they're being there. And there have been times when I've seen conversations get a little bit more in depth, like, hey, I'm not doing well, this and that. And I never want to be so throwaway as to say, well, just, you know, do something else, do pivot for a while. They just can't, because they're so locked into this life. You know, it's something they, you know, and it's not an entitlement. It's just basically they just don't know what to do with themselves. And I wake up too like that. I mean, hell, most of the stuff I do is just to stay busy, so I don't get locked into that mindset. But I think overall it's been very supportive, and I hope that continues on when things kind of do start winding up and people start going out again. So, but it's so funny. We were talking about John, you know, Smith and Myers, one of his acts, he's been going on the road with them during COVID. They've been doing the drive-in shows and stuff like that. And I met up with him at one of the dates, and people are hungry for live shows again, even in those pod situations, once aren't, you know, it feels really weird, but with the things I saw, people are really enjoying themselves. So, part of that bright, when I see, like today, I've opened up pages and I saw, like, you know, this festival is playing in September or whatever. I don't know what the ramifications, what their protocol is. Is it going to be a safe distancing thing, whatever? I'm just glad to see shows being billed and put out there so people can go, oh God, thank God. You know, if we can get a little lightness, every day is a little bit more of a glimmer for people to start feeling better. But I'm always just like, keep learning stuff. Learn how to do Excel, learn how to do spreadsheets, learn how to carry things. Some people don't know how to lift up an amplifier. Learn how to lift things. It's simple. Pick it up and walk with it. Go to the gym and learn. Get strong. Be healthy. Be the best person you can, so you're the most hireable person they can find.
That is a point that I actually has not been brought up at all, that you just completely hit on. Physical fitness is actually like really important, for people who tour. Like, why not get stronger? So it's like, yeah, you can take care of your mind, but there's a very real reason to also take care of your body, especially now that if you have the opportunity to be a little bit more careful with your body and take care of yourself, and then just, you know, nurture it so that when you go back, you can hit the ground running.
Well, one of the things too, is that a lot of artists are sober these days. Everyone's either in recovery, they were sober to begin with, or they're like really far into their process. And if you can come on and be physically fit, which when you're physically fit, obviously you're a little bit more sounder mind. Your confidence is there. You're feeling good. The blood's flowing properly. So yeah, I'd be looking for people who are like in shape. You got to take care of yourself. Yes, the long hours can beat the crap out of you, and getting the idea of working 20 hours and going to a gym when you're at a hotel is tough. But I'm like, do yoga, whatever, stay flexible, just keep that movement going. So yes, coming into a tour, being physically fit, there's no reason not to come out of this COVID thing not in the best shape of your life. There really isn't. I know there's a lot of things that come up, people are worried about being sick or whatever. Find a way, but because physical fitness is, that's over half the job. And a lot of people, like, sometimes I'm like, how the hell are you making it, man? How are you doing this? And then I see people's, like, even backstage catering has gotten better. You know, they have vegan options and plant-based options and things like that. So I think if people can kind of stay with that thinking and keep progressing with that, I think we'll be a much healthier industry, you know, literally a healthier industry. Because, you know, it's funny. We just had on Making Waves, we had Daniela Clark and Daniel Wild, Zach Wilds and Gilby Clark's wives, because they have their own podcast called Honest AF. And we were talking about the backstage life these days when they started out and now, and it's like the booze and beer is now juicers. That's where they are in their lives, you know, and they wanted to be healthy because obviously a longer career.
Yep. I love it. Well, this was an amazing conversation, Justin. Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. I gave you a few gems, but yeah, this is so fun. I love just open conversations about everything. And thank you for having me. This is a lot of fun. And I definitely look forward to maybe at some point doing return engagement.
Of course. All right. We'll talk soon. Have a great night.
Thank you. Thank you.
Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Justin Press. 1. The follow-up is key. Don't be afraid to take that extra little uncomfortable step and to put your most authentic self out there. It could lead you to places you never imagined. 2. If you want to make it in the industry, be reliable, show up on time, have a good attitude, don't complain, and stay out of people's way. And never forget that the real value of each tour you take on is in the relationships you form and the extraordinary experiences you get to have. 3. Patience and empathy is a practice, but it's absolutely worth it. Seek out others who also appreciate the practice because it says a lot about what type of people they are. This is especially important when you'll be living with them on tour. 4. Be sure to take inventory and soak in the beautiful parts of your life and career, and never forget what it's like to be a fan. And 5, physical fitness is very important for everyone, but especially for people who tour. So be sure to take care of your body and to focus on mobility and strength. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Justin a follow on Instagram at justinpress_photo. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow the Tour Life on Instagram at the Tour Life podcast.